Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder. Pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here are your hosts, the one and only Dr. Peyray and the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
So you had this fear of essentially what most people think of bringing the associate in is you cut your practice in half. Okay. How did you guys get past that fear? Because to a certain degree, you're landlocked and your building is only so big. Okay. You know, it's not necessarily like you're doing a lot of marketing at that time. Were you doing any marketing?
Random little thing.
Essentially nothing.
Yeah, civic club.
But stuff. Yellow Pages were out by then, right, yeah. Rick?
You had a webpage. You know, our website is TennesseeDentist.com. So I got that in like 95. Yeah. So we've been early adopters.
So, what got you past that fear of cutting your income and going there? Walk us through. And what I'm trying to get through here is the value of technology and procedural growth and CE in that, and what that looked like.
Well, I've always been sort of a CE junkie and always realize that investing in myself, which is one of the things that we teach, is your best investment. You know, I'm betting on me. He went and took 6 months miles before he graduated. So he's in 6 months miles continuum with a bunch of dentists. It was kind of funny. They're like, oh, well, how's your practice? Well, I'm still in school. So when he got out of school and started offering orthodontics.
And you weren't doing orthodontics in your practice.
But to long-term patients that I'd tried to send to the orthodontist for years, next thing you know, he's got 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 cases going. I'm sitting back going, wow, this is kind of crazy. So that part of the practice started building. He went and did the CEREC doctor's courses real quick to get up to speed because we were CEREC practice. And he pushed me to get more into CEREC, okay, not just single crowns, to the point where I don't think we moved any impression trays over in the move. Maybe
that's a lie.
I hit a few.
I tried.
We scrolled some away. But it wasn't like we had a lull time where he wasn't suddenly, you know, improving the bottom line. It's like, wow, this is working. I'm busy. Because suddenly now I was able to begin to do the things I wanted. And he was starting to pick up the hygiene checks and the restorations and the general dentistry. All of a sudden, I'm going to do more wisdom teeth, more sedation, more Lanap. At that point, he's like, Dad.
And these patients are in your practice.
Oh, all over the place.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, Sully, I think that's a good exit point for us to talk a little bit about that part of it. I think sometimes people, what we're learning through our mastermind and working with more dentists now, is people don't realize that there's a opportunity cost that fillings and crowns and general busyness, hygiene checks, even in this case, even if you're doing wisdom teeth is costing you Lanaps or whatever it may be, right? Talk to us about looking back, how you see the opportunity cost and what you would tell other dentists about what your dad was just talking about.
Well, I saw it early on, I guess, with him, you know, because I saw that he had a super robust skill set and that he was surgically was really, really good, right? He was doing his own all fully impacted third molars. And I'm like, dude, if you're doing this, why aren't you placing implants, right? And, you know, you saw, hey, it was the challenge with him was he was so busy doing fillings and crowns and there was no block scheduling. It was the scheduling of just, you know,
it was his dad's schedule.
What
it's
fits?
I got six chairs. I'm just
It was just. It was just. You know, and we train our team members
to fill the schedule
in the worst way possible, which is we train them to make sure that schedule is full. And so, well, what do? They just keep it full. So the schedule's always full, which is great, but it's full with the wrong stuff.
As a side note, I want to make sure we have this conversation with our mastermind group this weekend because some of them are starting to see that. As they've implemented photography, that they're with the general, you know, some slowdown in their practice, they're worried. And I want to talk about the risk, the right. Negatives of pushing fill.
Because I leave blocks open now, yeah. You know, to the last minute. But anyways, yeah. So for me, mindset wise, Dad and I are kind of different. You know, Dad and maybe it's the way we grew up or just the way that he saw his dad.
Well,
work,
you're spoiled. Then, he's not.
Well, yeah, or maybe that too. So, but I definitely have come from a little bit more of. Just a work smarter, not harder kind of mentality. So instead of not grind, like dad, you know, I joke all the time that dad will be at the lake outside, like blowing the leaves out of the woods. Right. I'm like, what are you doing? That's like the woods. But that was kind of the mindset of I came in here. Okay. Well, what can we do? How can we do things differently or to be more effective? And I started like looking at things and saying, okay, well, if my goal is to produce, you know, $3,000 a day, then I could do that doing a bunch of Delta Dental $150 fillings, or I could do two implants or one ortho case. And so I was like, well, that makes a lot more sense. So for me, very quickly, I started targeting my CE at things that could elevate my production at a minimal, you know, time stance. And then what's happened now, and which I really see it is because I joke all the time that, you know, that my production this past year has significantly increased. Hold on, we're taking a picture.
We're just so proud. I mean, are you kidding me?
So yeah, so it's interesting. I've worked less days this year. Dad's worked less days this year, but for a lot of reasons. What?
Well, I want us to go backwards. I want us to talk about part's going to get there. Okay.
I may jump ahead
a little bit. I want us to talk about the light bulb that should have gone off in your dad, in Rick's head of, oh my God, I brought an associate in. I was fearful of where the business was going to come from. I suddenly had open spots because I was feeding my associate. And that's something else we should talk about a little bit later, is the mindset of feeding associate. And then suddenly your open margins, not dental open margins, but schedule open margins, were filled with highly productive procedures, which were already inside of your practice. And that to me is the amazing part. It's not like you weren't offering wisdom teeth. It's because you were more available, you're able to do more wisdom teeth on your existing patient base.
So the first course he took post me, you know, we bought Combeam, and then it was an implant refresher. The next thing you know,
implants are back. So I come back in January of 17 with the commitment, every extraction is going to be a graft and membrane. And I would say to this day, we're still in the high 90%.
So he, you know, and now, which this gets into total kind of sidebar effect, which I don't think dad minds sharing. But part of it again was, you know, dad, about the time that I was coming out of dental school, you know, started to probably look at his financial life too, and trying to figure out where he was based off, you know, where he wanted to be retirement and what he had done, what he hadn't done.
He's 52 at this point, right?
Right, exactly. And I think it became challenging too, to start to see that, because for him, he was trying to shuck away as much money as possible, you know, at the same time. So he was definitely in like, okay, what can I do to get more income to do those things? And I think that was the surprising thing that he saw, was his income the first year I was there was the most, he had personally the most production he's ever had the year I came in.
Without a patient-based growth.
Without a patient-based growth.
That's what I keep going back to.
Our patient base grew within the first 3 years, only 500 patients.
Which is nothing in the scheme of things.
No.
And but you doubled your practice. You more than doubled your practice that first. And by the way, I want to talk about this because I hear this from associates all the time. And so this is this is directed at the owner dentists out there, because so many of them in Europe were in your position, Rick. And they say, well, this is my opportunity to squirrel away money. And they go into this tightening mode and they don't invest in their practice. And I talk about comma thinking versus decimal thinking, and that savings mentality, I'm going to save my way to retirement, that decimal point thinking versus the comma thinking, which is, okay, I'm not going to spend my way to retirement, but I'm going to invest into my practice. So that's a good segue, actually. Talk to us about, because I've heard Rick say this many times. Maybe it's just through Sully, but I've heard it from you as well, that CBCT was a game changer for you.
No, 100 could not be more accurate.
So talk to us about that. Talk to us about the decision process, what led to that decision, and what the outcome of that was.
So that was one of those things, is my planner was like, you know, I said, I want to buy Combeam. And he's like, well, you know, let's wait till Sully gets there so he can help pay for it. But in reality is, once refresher on the implant course, come back, start taking extractions and stuff, become grafts, led to implants. But we found all that because we started doing Combeam. So we came back, we put the Combeam in April 2016. And immediately...
And Sully had joined already at this point?
He had been out 9 months.
9 months, okay.
So we came back and...
No, I didn't join the practice. I didn't buy in until January 1st, 2017.
No, but you were in already.
You were in the practice.
Yeah. You were already in the practice.
So basically, one of the things too is I was so busy, I wasn't checking my hygiene every time. So there was a lot of lost opportunity there on a regularly recurring basis. That Sully, when he came in and started checking hygiene all the time, we were able to catch up on that. But once we got the cone beam... It was like Oprah. Everybody gets a car. Everybody gets a cone beam. People are like, what do you charge for them? Give them away. Doesn't matter. The dentistry you're going to find and diagnose with a cone beam and help patients understand and accept is off the charts.
But the flip side of this, which we have to comment on, is that what Dad did as soon as I came in was he was feeding me with a lot of dentistry, but he took that opportunity now to replace himself to go take himself to the next level.
Yeah, take some CE.
Right. So, and like in 2019 at age, whatever he is, 57, 58 at that point, he had the most CE of any dentist in Tennessee.
And what
he
an
got
award.
The CE award.
275 hours.
At that, you know, and who's taking, because that was the mindset of like, I'm just going to keep investing and growing my thing. So I keep making myself more valuable to the practice and that I can only do these niche things. And anything that these other dentists can do, they should be doing. So he kept investing. So the CBCT became so valuable because we saw the opportunity in the endo problems, the missing teeth, the seeing implants, guided surgery, all these type things. And then instead of just looking at them, we saw patients in our practice that were already there. They didn't have to go pay money to get them in, marketing, anything like that. And we said, well, gosh, we should just do, instead of send that patient out, we should learn to do the dentistry that now we can do with the technology that we diagnose.
Let's step back for a second here. So selfishly speaking here,
of course.
So CBCT is what led us to first meet each other.
It did. Okay. You were the Patterson 3D Summit
yeah.
in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. And here in Nashville,
you spoke and we bought the company.
In January of 16.
So in a not self-serving way, I really not in that way, is the reason I'm asking, let me frame it better, okay? The reason I'm asking these questions is so many people listening have heard the story. Oh, it changes this, it changes that, but yet they do nothing. And what people don't talk about enough is walk through the decision-making process, the fear, because there's a fear. It's not like CBCT was $50,000.
It was 120 then. Grand we bought ours.
Right. It was, and so it's not, I want to put it into perspective. Number one, it was $120,000 back then, okay? You had just bought 8 chairs. Okay. Your practice was just starting to grow again.
I've only been there nine months.
So it's not like you really saw the fruits of all of that, correct?
No.
You know, so you're doubling down in a sense, correct? So what were the fears? So, and I want to back up one more second in that. And this is an important message, I think. Okay. It's too often as dentists, when our reps come to us and invite us to learning/sales events, we go into it with a negative attitude of, I don't want to go get sold anything. But at the end of the day, part of my question is if XYZ distributor hadn't invited you to that particular event, would you have bought Conebeam? And if you didn't, let's see what wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean? So it's nobody says you have to go and buy. But you owe it to yourself to at least go and see what's possible. So walk me through your fears of spending 120 grand, which essentially at that point is your money, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not his money.
Right.
We felt like that was the next step for us. So we knew it needed to happen.
What made you go to that particular event?
Scott, right? Sarek.
Sarek, Dentsply Sirona, because I was already a Sarek practice since 2007.
Well, no offense, back then it was still Sirona.
It was Sirona.
It was the great old days.
it was the days of the blues, House of Blues party in Chicago. Yeah. I wanted to stay at the time with something that would, I believe their technology.
You had seen what Sarek had done for your practice.
Thank you. I'd seen what Sarek had done. I believed in the company. I believed in the process.
To hear them out first.
Okay. Right. And you were there. August was there.
Yeah, Neil.
All the heavy hitters were there. And so it's like, if you don't buy now, something's the matter with you. And so they had it. We called a local bank. We got the financing, installed it, had the computers upgraded a little bit. And, you know, we used it. But that's the thing. When they got in, we used it. with three hygienists, suddenly we're taking literally 30 cone beams a day. So we were spending all this time, you know, at night we were looking through them. Afternoons, our part of our regroup is now we're reading cone beams together. And I'm finding, and I used to tell Sully that he joked about this, the answer is always occlusion. Well, now it's always occlusion until you get a cone beam. Then it's
there's a massive abscess.
Then it's a massive abscess. It's endo. It's an extraction graft implant. But now I can show this to patients on a 52-inch screen, 60-inch screen in the hallway or in the room, and they suddenly understand it. The doctor thought enough of his practice and his patients to invest in this, so the patient understands it. It's a communication tool, just like the photography. And patients said yes, and yes, and yes, and yes.
So, okay, so now we've leveraged cone beam. Now we start adding implants to the practice. Are you placing implants at this point, Tully?
I went and got my implant training that summer.
All right, how do you guys compete with each other? Because it's one thing in my practice when I bring an associate in and I'm up front like, listen, I'm doing the implants right now, which I'd love to talk about the negatives of that as well in the big scheme of things.
The long run, yeah.
Yeah, and So how are you guys handling the competing with each other part? Because you want to do implants too, correct? Right. I know now you
that
are.
That was hard. That was a hard period. So a hard period for us.
Because a lot of dentists face this.
Right.
Like I you know, either they don't bring an associate with a lot of skills because they're afraid they're going to compete with themselves, or, you know, or they give away all the good stuff, which I have a problem with that too, but that's a different story. Or they have this clash and this competition trying to do the fancy stuff. And then the person ends up leaving.
Right. And that was a hard, there were two parts that were really hard for us. One was, which was kind of trickling together was one was as we approached that summer where I learned to do implants, we started competing more. I also saw the practice profitability going up like crazy. You know, now we're in year two, we're close to 2 million. You know, going from 1.415 to 2 million, and I'm just seeing this go up, and I'm like, hey, I want to buy in, right? And so, and personality-wise, I'm bulldoggy maybe a little bit on some of that, probably, and just like, I was like, hey,
I call that spoiled.
Bully.
I don't know. I just, you know, and I wanted to do that stuff too, and, you know, I had this mindset of like, which obviously I talk a lot about on the podcast of like, if you want it, go get it, but go take the CE, go learn to do it. You know, put your money where your mouth is, and that I wanted to be the best, and I didn't want to wait to have to do good clinical dentistry.
You didn't want to wait time. Your turn.
Yeah, and there was good aspects to the bad aspects. The negatives were I probably learned a lot of things the hard way because I didn't wait. I was cowboy, whatever it was. But then there's a lot of good aspects, right? I wouldn't be here if I didn't push so hard sometimes. And so for us, it was difficult to share that thing. But I think the core of why it's been successful is because both of us try to come back to a mindset of abundance versus scarcity. And that we don't, even though we both want to do more implants, we both want to do more wisdom teeth, because I'd be lying if I told you there haven't been days that we are basically yelling at each other on how he got to see that consult and I didn't, and who scheduled that. And, you know,
I mean, because at the end of the day, while you are family, you still have your own life to fund, your own family to take care of. You have your own family to take care of.
And for the most part, we're paid off, eat what you kill, yeah. Right? I mean, like, and it's that, a production it mindset of, yeah. So like for me, like that was.
Why did he get that hybrid and you didn't?
Yeah. And so that was hard. And like, and we had to keep coming back to, and we were fortunate in that family ultimately from day one was the, we can't stay mad at each other.
Thanksgiving dinners get really awkward that way.
And I think that's definitely a point that is an incredible, like the whole father-son thing. If there's anything that is an advantage, it was that. And, but there's some that don't work that way because they can't get over it. But for us, it was like, we're going to have that same relationship. And we're trying to have that with Megan too, because if at the end of the day, the relationship is the most important, and that goes back to culture, then we can have those arguments and then we can come back to saying, okay, hey, if we both want to do this, what do we need to do to make it fair? Or what do we need to do to keep bringing in more so that there's so much abundance that it doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, there's plenty of the dentistry to go around.
No disrespect to you, Sully. I'm going to give Rick 80% of the credit on this. I think his personality
I agree.
Uniquely unique to kind of say, take one for the team.
Well, Dad, talk a little bit about, I mean, this could go into a total of the rabbit holes, which is probably a great podcast on some level, but, you know, talk about where you were personally, just from a standpoint of, if I had come into the practice probably 10 years earlier, we are no longer together. We probably have a totally dysfunctional father-son relationship. And I agree with you. I think because of where he was at personally, which he can talk about a little bit, that's the key to probably all this, all of it.
We'll go there. All right.
I'm not saying you have to be comfortable there. I'm just saying, to the comfort level that you want to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's
2012. I got involved with a 12-step group called Al-Anon. It is a 12-step group for family and friends of alcoholics. And I had some alcoholics in my family, and that affects us all. It's a family disease. But working through that program and working through the 12 steps, I realized my part in that and my part in what I needed to fix in me. We focus on ourselves. And so by working through 4, 5, 6, 7 years of recovery at this point, it allowed me to treat Sully in a different way. Because one of the big symptoms of someone who was where I was we try to control everything. I had an opinion, and yours ought to be the same as mine. It was a very black and white world. This is how we do it. This is how it should be done, period. And I realized my own character defects that I had to improve and work on, and how that affected all my relationships, not just my relationship with the people in my life that were alcoholics. And so by doing that, I learned to find, you know, serenity, peace, however you want to call it. And one of the things was learning to give up control, sort of the let go and let God mentality. Okay. And like Sally said, this can get on a whole squirrely rabbit hole, and I'm trying to kind of synopsize this a little bit. But basically, I realized I wasn't going to control Sully. I need to let him be him. I need to stay in my lane, stay in my hula hoop. And by doing that, that gave him the freedom to grow.
Good and bad, probably.
Good and bad. Because what happens is...
But all good in the end.
Oh, for sure.
Just like as a parent, if you give a child a car and they wreck it, they don't really see the loss in that, but if they work hard on the summers and buy their own car, they're a lot more proud of that. It's that you give them the opportunity to win. Okay, the kid that puts himself through school and comes out with a degree is a lot more appreciative of that degree than the kid who was given a trust fund, as a general rule. And so by giving him the dignity to both succeed and fail, it allowed him to grow faster and allowed him to win. But it allowed us both to win. You know, Sully would say, you know, Dad's on the grace train. You know, rather than judge people, and this is how I treat patients now too, as everybody's where they are, let's address them that. And the same with my team members, the same with people in life, okay? But what it's done for me personally, it allowed me to translate that over to me, to my professional life too. And if I had tried to micromanage and microcontrol, it would have been a disaster. But by sitting back, giving up control, giving him the dignity and the opportunity to bring in new ideas and not thinking I knew it all, that I had all the answers, but say, hey, maybe there's a better way. Block scheduling, this kind of marketing, let's do this. And giving you the opportunity to bring those back, even though most of them were your ideas.
That's okay. That's why I give out the ideas for people who use them.
Not steal them, but use them.
I'm T-Bone's best implementer.
Without question.
Every time he would come to Raleigh and come back, it was like, oh, here we go. What's this weekend? But that allowed him to blossom rather than me keep cutting down and, you know, cutting the flower off for it at the bud.
Well, and what part for me, what was so impactful not only as a son, but like as an associate at the time and trying to learn like how to do dentistry was the, I saw that and that made me want to be more like that, right? When I would see him give on stuff, it made me more, so much more willing to want to ask for help, to go look for things to do that. It just perpetuated that kind of mentality.
The word I wrote down while you were talking, and there's a lot of important things there. The word I wrote down that that hit me the most was the word dignity. And I think that's a word as owners, as type A personalities, which me and Sully are for sure, and I'm sure you are as well. Sometimes we forget how to give people dignity, because it's easy for us to say, oh, you must be stupid. Why can't you get this? And I think that's an area where I have to improve myself, is to get to the next step. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. You know, you joke that you're probably the best implementer, and I 100% agree with you that you have been, for sure. I talked to a lot of people about you as an example, and they all say, well, it must be easy. You walked into your dad's practice, or it's easy to double, triple, quadruple your practice when you have somebody driven come in. And I argue it's not easy. It's not easy to bring in a strong personality. It's not easy to bring in a strong clinical skill set. It's not easy when you're trying to squirrel away for your retirement and catch up. It's not easy to go invest 120 grand plus whatever the equipment was, plus the renovation of the office. It's not easy to do those things. I will argue that more people fail in that scenario than the scenario where they bring in a weaker person that is their mentality is, I want to be a bread and butter dentist. And to those who've said that to me, and I understand, I think a lot of it comes from jealousy, frankly speaking, that why have you gotten so much so quick? And what I tell everybody I'm sharing this with, because you've been very open about sharing that personal story, is I tell people, look, Sully's not for everybody. I mean, he's not. Okay. Just like I'm not for everybody. But what you can't do with me about him is you can't say he hasn't earned it. Okay. You've been given opportunities that have been presented to lots of other people. The difference is you kicked open the door when the door was barely open. And so many people have had the opportunity, they just haven't kicked open the door. And there's a relentlessness to you that is very annoying at times, but...
I think this is a compliment, so thank you.
No, but it is very annoying at the time, but it's reason you've gotten to this point.
Right.
And I hope you maintain some of that to get you to the next point. Okay. Right. Enough about Sully. Okay.
That was one of the nicest things you ever said about me.
That's very hard. Okay. That's very hard.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.